Hello and welcome to Ox Talk for Tuesday, the 30th of September 2025. My name is Guy and I've compiled the edition for this week. News items have been selected from local Oxford papers by Kristen Dennison and Lisa Tom, and recorded at home by Kristen Dennison and Hazel Hobbs. The USBs have been copied and distributed by Michelle Lawful. Sunrise today is at 7:04 a.m. and sunset is at 6:44 p.m. We hope you enjoy our selection of news articles for this week.
The University of Oxford's Christ Church College will launch a music festival to celebrate its 500th anniversary. The Christ Church 500 Music Festival will run throughout October and November, featuring concerts, recitals and special events. The festival is part of Christ Church wider anniversary celebrations and will honour its historical legacy and ongoing influence in music. The Very Reverend Professor Sarah Foote, Dean of Christ Church, said, "From the earliest Tudor compositions to 20th century English masters and contemporary voices, we invite audiences to journey with us through Christ Church's musical legacy." Founded in 1525 by Thomas Wolseley as Cardinal College, Christ Church was later re-established by King Henry VIII and serves as both a university college and the city's cathedral. Music has long been central to its identity, particularly through its world-famous choir, established in the same year with John Traverna as its first organist and master of the choristers. The festival will celebrate both the historical and contemporary musical contributions of the college, featuring works by Taverner, Dowland and Walton, alongside those by living composers. Performances will be given by artists and ensembles with strong ties to Christ Church, including the English Concert, Phantasm and Alamaya. The festival will open on October the 1st with the performance of Franz Joseph Haydn's The Creation, featuring the Cathedral Choir, the Baroque Orchestra, the English Concert and the Girls' Choir Friedswild's Voices. It will be conducted by Peter Holder and include soloists Carolyn Sampson, William Balquhill and Thomas Humphreys. The programme continues with a violin and piano recital on the 9th of October by alumnus Charlie Lovell-Jones and Julian Chan, who will perform works by Sir William Walton, Mozart and Respighi. On the 28th of October, law student Louise Guy will present a piano recital of romantic repertoire, including works by Chopin and Liszt. Christ Church organist Peter Holder will give an organ recital on October the 30th, and Errol Wallen, Master of the King's Music, will speak with Dr. Leah Broad in the Christ Church Upper Library on the 1st of November. Alumna Judith Valerie Engel will perform a piano recital spotlighting female composers on November the 16th. The vocal consort Alamaya will perform works by Taverna on November the 19th, while the Little Kitchen Ensemble will present a new programme on the 20th of November. On the 21st of November, alumna Libby Burgess will give a piano recital featuring works by Bach, Busoni and Coleridge Taylor. A day later, award-winning viol consort Phantasm, alongside acclaimed lute Professor Elizabeth Kenny, will perform Lacrimae. The festival closes on the 25th of November with a performance of William Walton's Façade, accompanied by a three-course meal in Christ Church's Great Hall.
Fullback Ellie Kildoon produced two stunning finishes as England survived a scare to set up a final against Canada by overcoming France 35-17 in the Women's Rugby World Cup semi-final on Saturday. World Player of the Year Kildoon celebrated her return to the side after missing the quarterfinals through concussion by running in the opening try before conjuring the 70th-minute score that confirmed the Red Roses' place in the main event at Allianz Stadium next Saturday. Oxford-born prop Maud Muir was also in the side, which defeated France at Bristol's Ashton Gate, and she is likely to start in the final as well. A 7-5 interval lead for England failed to tell the story of a first half dominated by France, who should have finished two more opportunities and will feel aggrieved that Kildoon's initial touchdown was not examined for a possible knock-on. It was an against-the-odds performance for Les Bleus, who had lost almost a third of their first-choice starting 15 to injury and suspension, yet threatened an upset to rival Canada's defeat of New Zealand the night before. But they came up against a physical England defense that soaked up vast amounts of pressure.
England cricket legend Stuart Broad will be entertaining audiences near Oxfordshire during his UK theatre tour. The retired fast bowler will reflect on the highs and lows of his 17-year career, as well as the new challenges he faces beyond the boundary rope. Taking place across September and October, dates include The Swan at High Wycombe on Thursday the 2nd of October and Milton Keynes Theatre the day after. Broad will take to the stage to recall memorable moments from his career, including Ashes glory, winning the T20 World Cup and joining the elite club of bowlers to take more than 600 test wickets. Commenting ahead of the shows, Broad said, "Last year's tour was such a unique and different experience for me. Getting the opportunity to sell some never-before-heard stories, as well as meeting fans across the country, was fantastic, so I can't wait to do it all over again. As well as telling stories from my playing career, we'll have had a whole summer of cricket I'll be looking back on, and, of course, I'll be giving my thoughts ahead of the Ashes this winter." The 39-year-old enjoyed many spectacular moments during his England career, including figures of 8-15 against Australia on the first session of the Ashes Test at Trent Bridge in 2015. He is also remembered for being hit for 6 sixes in an over by India's Yuvraj Singh at the T20 World Cup in 2007. Broad claimed the final 2 wickets in his final test match as England beat Australia at the Kia Oval during the 2023 Ashes. Tickets for the tour are now on sale at www.fane.co.uk/Stuart-Broad.
Oxford will not have the opportunity to decide if its street lights are to be turned down or off. The County Council is expected to decide. As part of recommendations that will be put to Oxfordshire County Council next month, councillors will be told Oxford City Council cannot apply to alter street lights in its area. Under the existing proposal and following feedback from a consultation, town and parish councils would be able to apply to reduce or switch off lighting in their respective areas. Oxfordshire County Council operates 60,000 street lights overnight across the county, and switching them off completely would save £400,000 a year. Lubna Arshad, Oxford City Councillor's cabinet member for a safer Oxford, said she welcomes the idea that the city cannot switch off the lights, but still expresses concern for others. She said, "I welcome the fact that Oxfordshire County Council has stepped back from its original plan for a countywide switch off of streetlights. However, I remain deeply concerned that this revised community-led approach still risks leaving residents in the dark. Street lighting is not a luxury. It is a cornerstone of public safety. Women and girls, shift workers, and vulnerable residents all rely on well-lit streets to feel safe at night. A patchwork parish-by-parish opt-in system creates a postcode lottery where safety depends on whether communities can afford to pay. That is unacceptable." Feedback received by the County Council from women suggested real concerns about their safety at night. They fear an increase in crime due to their lack of visibility at night, which puts them at risk, a summary from the consultation said. Sean Rooney, head of maintenance and road safety at the county council, said in a report that there is no evidence to suggest statistical significant effects on women's safety. He added, "We do acknowledge, however, the genuine concerns of residents and community groups and have introduced mitigation measures, which include a targeted exemption list which addresses specific concerns raised by these groups. We will be holding public consultations on each proposed part night lighting scheme, which we will encourage parish and town councils to engage on with their specific women stakeholder groups." Ms. Arshad added, "The county council's own figures show that the financial and carbon savings are marginal when set against the risks. Just over a ton of carbon saved in some areas compared to the real fear and risk of crime that darkened streets bring. We should be investing in modern LED lighting, smart dimming technology, and renewable energy solutions that cut costs and carbon without compromising on security. Labor will continue to stand with police, campaigners, and residents to oppose measures that put public safety second to minimal savings."
This is an electric blanket testing announcement compiled by Trading Standards and read by David Brassington. When you have listened to the announcement, if you have an electric blanket, you can ring up the nearest centre to you to arrange for your electric blanket to be tested, or ask your carer or a member of your family to arrange this. It is important your electric blanket is tested each year.
How safe is your electric blanket? Trading Standards, working with district councils, the Fire and Rescue Service, Age UK and the Volunteer Driver Service, are offering free electric blanket checks. So make sure your electric blanket is safe to use this winter. The dates and venues of the checks in September are Monday the 22nd in Rose Hill, Oxford, Tuesday the 23rd in Henley-on-Thames, Wednesday the 24th in Bicester, Thursday the 25th in Chipping Norton, and Friday the 26th in Abingdon. In October, the venues and dates are Monday the 6th in Risinghurst, Oxford, Tuesday the 7th in Didcot, Wednesday the 8th in Banbury, Thursday the 9th in Whitney, and Friday the 10th in Wantage. So why not join us and bring a friend for free refreshments and information about keeping safe and well? We're offering collections from your home if you're unable to get to us, so please tell us when you make your booking that you need a collection. To book your safety check appointment, call 01865 519 800 and select option 4, or email duty.officer@oxfordshire.gov.uk. You can also book online by going to service.oxfordshire.gov.uk/blanket testing. Appointments are on a first-come, first-served basis, so book early.
Oxford's congestion charge is going to come in earlier than expected after Oxfordshire County Council announced its start date. The temporary scheme was approved by the Council's Cabinet at a meeting on September the 10th with the aim that it would be introduced no later than November the 10th. The County Council has now said the scheme will start Wednesday the 29th of October. Residents can now apply for permits using the Council's online registration system, which will be valid for 12 months. Under the scheme, motorists will be charged £5 for driving through 6 roads in the city unless they have a permit or exemption. The charge will be payable only once per day and allows cars to go through multiple charge locations per day or any single charge location multiple times per day. Permits are available for a number of residents, including blue badge holders, care workers, mobile traders, and patients with frequent hospital visits. Residents within the Oxford permit area can also get 100 day passes, while those in the Oxfordshire permit area can get 25 day passes. Any vehicle that is not a car, such as a bus, van or motorbike, is automatically exempt and owners do not need to apply for a permit. The roads affected include Hythebridge Street, St Cross Road, Thames Street and St Clement Street every day from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m, as well as Marston Ferry Road and Holloway Monday to Saturday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Councillor Andrew Gant, Cabinet Member for Transport Management, said, "Oxford needs to reduce the number of cars on its roads to thrive. I am delighted that we have now reached this important milestone in implementing the temporary congestion charge in Oxford. Together with the significant reduction in congestion that we will see with the temporary charge, the permits will enable those who need to make trips by car to do so much more easily. Thank you to residents, businesses and partners who have provided us with feedback on this temporary charge, including the consultation in the summer and representations to Cabinet earlier in September. We have used this to develop the different types of permit available."
Politicians have argued that the public deserve transparency over the council decision to introduce a congestion charge in Oxford after a legal agreement with the bus companies came to light. The £5 temporary congestion charge was approved by Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet on Wednesday, September 10th. Councillor Tim Bearder mentioned at the meeting that Oxfordshire Council previously made an agreement with the local bus companies to make bus journeys 10% faster by December 2025 as part of the Bus Service Improvement Plan. A Cabinet report dating back to June 2022 states that there is a risk of operators resorting to legal action against the council if they do not fulfill their obligations to the bus companies. It adds that this could mean funding for the scheme could be withdrawn or that the council may be unable to bid for future funding. The county council said they are not obliged in any way to introduce a congestion charge scheme or any other traffic measure. But some are arguing that the legal agreement should have been made clearer and have labeled the consultation, where 74% of respondents objected to the scheme, as a box-ticking exercise. Councillor Liam Walker, leader of the opposition and chair of the Place and Scrutiny Committee, said, "The people of Oxfordshire were told their views mattered, yet all along the council had already signed a deal committing them to act by December 2025. This was not an open consultation. It was a box-ticking exercise designed to justify a predetermined outcome." Whilst this information was buried in council papers from June 2022, it's key as to why the council was pressing ahead with the congestion charge despite residents not supporting the scheme. Richard Parnham from action group Reconnecting Oxford said, "The council should come clean about its potential financial liabilities to the bus companies if it doesn't install the congestion charge, because that is a material fact that should have been made clear to the public during the consultation. The council is under ethical duties under what are known as Gunning and Nolan principles to be transparent with the public about this kind of thing." The Independent Oxford Alliance are calling for the county council to immediately publish the full bus company agreement for scrutiny and release the bus speed performance data linked to the contract. IOA Councillor David Henwood said, "The public and councillors alike deserve transparency. Leaving out crucial documents from scrutiny not only undermines trust, but raises serious questions about accountability and decision-making at the highest level." Mr. Henwood tried to get the congestion charge decision called in to scrutiny again. This was refused earlier this week because it had already been discussed by the scrutiny committee.
As councils across the country step up their enforcement efforts, drivers with a blue badge are being warned to be aware of the hidden, stricter parking rules that could land them with a hefty fine. Many people who have their badge for years are still getting caught out by rules they don't know about. New data from the Department for Transport shows there are now 2.84 million blue badges held in England, so it's more important than ever to make sure you're using yours correctly. Daniel Swain, a mobility expert from Seacroft Mobility, explains, "It's a really common problem. Most people think their blue badge is a license to park anywhere for free, but that's just not the case. To avoid getting caught out, Daniel has highlighted some of the most common mistakes people make. Don't assume a blue badge gives free parking. A blue badge doesn't always guarantee free parking in a private car park, like at a supermarket or hospital. You must always read the signs there, as you might still have to pay or register your car. The parking clock is crucial. Even when you can park on a yellow line, there's usually a time limit of 3 hours. If you don't display your parking clock showing your arrival time, you can be fined. A badge is for the holder only. You can only display your blue badge if the person it was issued to is in the car, either as a driver or a passenger. It's a criminal offence to lend it to a family member or friend to do an errand for you. Don't do it, as it could result in a fine of up to £1,000. Always display your badge and clock on the dashboard so they can easily be seen. Before you travel to a new place, check the local council's website for specific rules. If your badge is faded or damaged, get a new one from your local council to avoid any issues. Different councils and even different car parks have their own rules, says Daniel. A simple mistake could cost you hundreds in fines or, in the worst cases, result in your badge being taken away.
People in Oxfordshire are being encouraged to book their winter flu vaccinations as soon as possible to reduce the severity of cold-like symptoms as temperatures begin to fall. Dr. Ellen Fallows, a GP and weight loss and lifestyle medicine expert from Welbeck Health Partners, said seasonal flu cases are already on the rise and people should take action sooner rather than later. She advised people to get vaccinated, prioritize good sleep, cut out ultra-processed foods, ditch phone use before bed, eat evening meals earlier, and be active at least once a day in a bid to avoid common winter viruses. She said, "Ironically, my family and I contracted influenza A during our summer getaway before we could get our vaccines. We were very unwell with high fevers for 5 days, and 4 weeks later we are still very fatigued, coughing, and short of breath. This unusually early case of influenza concerns me that everyone eligible to receive their flu vaccination should do it as soon as possible. Flu is a really serious illness even for those who are relatively fit and well. Vaccine should prevent you from catching the flu and reduce symptoms should you become infected. Interestingly, being vaccinated has also been found to reduce your chances of heart attacks and strokes in the future. You can also keep rooms ventilated and wash your hands to reduce chances of catching or spreading flu. Viral infections such as coronaviruses, influenza, and strep bacteria are expected to affect up to 15 million people this winter." Dr. Fallows believes a proactive approach to staying healthy is the best way to reduce the risk of developing severe symptoms, which can result in a person taking time off work or even being hospitalized. She added, "Secondary to prioritizing your flu vaccination is prioritizing your sleep. Particularly prior to getting a vaccine, research suggests that a good night's sleep before vaccination increases the chance you'll make a good immune response. Good quality sleep is a game changer when it comes to maintaining a strong immune system. It allows our bodies to recover, regenerate, and build a defense against viruses we might encounter. The power of good sleep should not be underestimated. If you eat late, work irregular shifts, consume alcohol, or use an electronic device before bed, it may disrupt your sleeping pattern." Dr. Fallows, who has more than 15 years' experience of supporting patients to achieve drug-free remission of common long-term conditions, will be working with the team at the Welbeck Oxford Medical Center, which will open in Jordan Hill next year.
Harry Potter star Emma Watson has finally broken her silence on a humbling driving ban which she received in July. The actress, 35, best known for playing Hermione Granger in the film franchise, was banned from driving for 6 months in July and had to pay a total of £1,044 after driving her blue Audi at 38 miles per hour in a 30 mile per hour zone in Oxford on July the 31st, 2024. Miss Watson, who has been studying at the University of Oxford, had 9 points on her licence before the speeding incident occurred. Speaking about the ban, which made headlines at the time, Miss Watson said, "I was getting phone calls, like it's on BBC, it's on international, worldwide news. It was like my shame is everywhere." Miss Watson revealed she received messages from people who sympathised with the actress and shared their own driving mishaps with the star. She added, "When you work on movies, I don't know if people know this, but they literally will not insure you to drive yourself to work. I've asked so many times. You have to be driven. It's not a choice, especially because they need you there, down to the minute, basically, depending on what they have going on. So I went from basically only driving myself on weekends or during a holiday to then, when I became a student, driving myself all the time, and I did not have the experience or skills clearly, which I now will and do. It's been a discovery and a journey that's been humbling, because on a movie set, I'm able to do all of these things, like extremely complex things, stunt, sing, dance, like do this thing, do that, whatever. And I'm like, yep, don't worry about it, guys. And then I get home and I like, okay, Emma, you seem unable to remember your keys. You seem unable to keep yourself at 30 miles per hour in a 30 miles per hour speed limit. Like, you don't seem able to do some pretty basic life things. It's been humbling." The actress and activist, who was made a UN Women's Goodwill Ambassador in 2014, has starred in a slew of films, including the 2017 Disney live-action remake of Beauty and the Beast, Sofia Coppola-directed movie The Bling Ring in 2014, and The Perks of Being a Wallflower in 2012. She also starred in the Greta Gerwig's 2019 movie Little Women, in which she played Meg March.
A group of veterans, staff, and volunteers from a national charity for vision-impaired ex-servicemen and women have visited an Oxfordshire RAF base. Three blind veterans, supported by Blind Veterans UK, alongside three volunteers and three staff members, visited RAF Breeze Norton on Saturday, September 13th. They were hosted by Corporal Rob Flint, an RAF medic in the RAF Reserves and a supporter of the charity. During their visit, the group toured Corporal Flint's squadron, where they explored two mock-up helicopters and had the opportunity to touch and feel medical prosthetics. Corporal Flint said, "It was important to me that I provide opportunities for the group to touch, feel, and hear the equipment on the base. I wanted the visit to be as tactile and sensory as possible. I was previously based at RAF Valley, and during my time there, I met a group of blind veterans who came for a visit. I was inspired by their stories and hearing how they are supported by Blind Veterans UK. They spoke of how they were isolated and had a lack of social opportunities before discovering the charity. This hit a nerve with me, as being in the military family is all about camaraderie, and it is so important to us. This is how I came to put the charity forward to benefit from fundraising at our Christmas event in 2024. The group were also given the chance to head out onto the airfield and visit the aircraft. During their visit, the veterans and staff were presented with £700, which had been raised for the charity. Sean Thomas from the Blind Veterans UK Community Partnerships team said, "The support we receive from serving members of the military is incredibly special to us and our veterans. I want to say a huge thank you to the personnel at RAF Breeze Norton, especially Rob, for taking the time to welcome Blind Veterans UK to the base and for choosing to support us with your fundraising. Blind Veterans UK supports thousands of blind veterans across the country, but knows there are many thousands more who still need its support to rebuild their lives after sight loss. Anyone who has served in the armed forces, including through national service, and is now living with sight loss, is encouraged to contact the charity for support. Since 1915, it has provided rehabilitation, training, practical advice, and emotional support to tens of thousands of blind veterans. The charity also helps veterans to avoid social isolation, which many veterans face.
The suspension of building works on the County Council's new home has given the authority an opportunity to consider options. Oxfordshire County Council formally submitted its plans for the redevelopment of Speedwell House in Speedwell Street after it was confirmed it would be moving out of County Hall. The scheme includes a cafe, council offices, assembly and meeting spaces, coroner's court and associated administration space. The County Council will be using proceeds from the sale of County Hall to fund the move. The plans were submitted despite the future of local government being uncertain with the government's plans for local government reorganisation. But now the timescale of the move is uncertain due to a recent potentially significant archaeological find at the Speedwell site. Earlier this month, the council said its findings means staff may not be able to occupy the building from that time and that a temporary alternative would need to be found. Now, the council has revealed that the planned move to Speedwell House has been affected and that the building work has been halted. The authority added that the proposal to move Speedwell preceded the government's local government reorganisation plans, so the suspension gives the authority an opportunity to consider options. A spokesperson told this newspaper, "The recent archaeological find does not impact the timeline for the sale of County Hall, which is proceeding as planned. The move out of County Hall is still scheduled for spring 2027. However, the planned move to Speedwell House has been affected. The building work has been halted, and we are in the process of producing a detailed report for Historic England to determine the nature of the discovery and the subsequent steps relating to the find. In the meantime, we are preparing an options appraisal for the redevelopment of Speedwell House." The council said it would use its existing buildings and those of partners to accommodate staff if needed, so there is minimal additional cost expected. City and County Councillor Susanna Pressell has shared her frustrations over the news. "The County Council recently completed the sale of County Hall and agreed a date by which we would all move out of County Hall," she said. "There are about 500 people who work there, either part-time or full-time, so it will be quite an undertaking. We were assured that by the time we had to move out, Speedwell House would be ready for us with all the facilities we need to do our work. So it was quite a bombshell to be told that the rumours were true. Speedwell House will not be ready after all." She added, "The infuriating thing is that this should have been utterly predictable. Speedwell House is very close to Folly Bridge, which is where there used to be a ford in the River Thames. This crossing place is thought to be why people first settled in the area. It is also very close to various notable historic sites, including Brackfriars Priory, established in 1246, the remains of which have been extensively surveyed and recorded. It beggars belief that the people investigating the surroundings of Speedwell House and preparing the site did not realise that there was something special just beneath the surface of the car park." Oxfordshire County Council spokesman said, "The correct protocols and processes have been followed throughout. An update would be provided when one is available."
Oxford is set to benefit from a £2 billion investment by US technology giant NVIDIA in the UK's artificial intelligence startup ecosystem. The company said the money will be used to expand AI infrastructure and provide capital to founders in the city, as well as London, Cambridge, and Manchester. NVIDIA founder and chief executive Jensen Huang said, "This is the age of AI, the big bang of a new industrial revolution." The United Kingdom is in a Goldilocks moment where world-class universities, bold startups, leading researchers, and cutting-edge supercomputing converge. There has never been a better time to invest in the UK. AI is unlocking new science and sparking entirely new industries. With new capital and advanced infrastructure, we are doubling down to empower the UK to lead the next wave of AI innovation. The investment will be made in collaboration with venture funds Accel, Air Street Capital, Balderton Capital, Hoxton Ventures, and Phoenix Court. Downing Street said the partnership would strengthen Britain's position as a global AI leader. Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer said, "NVIDIA's investment is a major vote of confidence in the UK both today and long into the future. By backing our startups, this partnership will create jobs and spark new industries."
A new ice cream parlour specialising in gelato ice cream is opening soon in Oxford. Amarino, which began with a single shop on Île Saint-Louis, Paris in 2002, now has more than 250 locations worldwide. As well as their gelato, Amarino offers a wide range of products, including a variety of different sorbets, gelato-filled macarons, milkshakes, waffles, and hot drinks. Posters have now gone up at the former Burger King unit in Cornmarket, advertising that Amarino will be opening soon. While the building is owned by Jesus College, Burger King closed its operations in late January 2023 following a poor food hygiene rating. The college unveiled plans to convert the upstairs of the building into student accommodation. Oxford City Council has been handed details of Amarino's plans for the vacant site. It includes a new shopfront featuring the company's branding, which aim to improve visual coherence and strengthen the active frontage of Cornmarket Street. Managing Director Hubert Attali said the team is thrilled to be introducing another one of their famed parlours on UK soil. "A huge thank you to our team and partners for their dedicated hard work," Mr. Attali said. "We've had an exciting start to 2025 and we're not done yet. We're looking forward to opening more shops." Amarino is known for its signature rose-shaped scoops of gelato in cones and artisan treats. It has opened branches in Marlow, Windsor and Bracknell and is also looking to open a new Galateria in Henley. Amarino's offering could be competition for Oxford's first gelateria, Ice Cream Gelateria, in the Covered Market. Graham MacDonald and his wife Jen opened the Ice Cream Gelateria in Historic Market in 2015 and it has attracted a loyal following ever since.
Three business people found themselves behind bars for a good cause. The lighthearted fundraiser took place at Oxford Castle and Prison on Thursday, September 18th, as part of the Children's Hospice Helen and Douglas House's Jail and Bail corporate fundraising event. The event has raised more than £5,200 so far, with the donation page still open. The prisoners, Kirsty McCarthy from Molecule to Medicine and Phil Isom and Matthew Snape from Moderna, were each tasked with raising £999 in bail to secure their release. Ms. McCarthy was charged with speaking in an incomprehensible Australian accent, while Mr. Isom faced accusations of improper use of a finger puppet in meetings. Meanwhile, Mr. Snape's crime was simply being Australian. Ms. McCarthy said, "Helen and Douglas House are a valued part of our community, consistently doing great work brightening the days of those who need it most. We at Molecule to Medicine are happy to get to work with them as often as we do, and I was happy to serve time for such a worthwhile cause. The trio were escorted to the historic prison, where they were arrested, tried before a judge, and sentenced to the cells. Each was given only a phone and laptop to contact friends, colleagues, and businesses to raise their bail money. All three successfully met their targets and were released by the end of the day. Olivia Crawford from Helena Douglas House said, "I would like to thank all these participants who took part in our jail and bail fundraiser. I would also like to thank Oxford Castle and Prison for allowing our inmates to be resident there for the day. The money that each inmate raised will help local terminally ill children and their families make the most of the time they have together. This would not be possible without amazing supporters like these wonderful local business people taking part in this fundraiser." Adam Mackinson, general manager at Oxford Castle and Prison, added, "We are so proud to be once again hosting Helen and Douglas House's Jail and Bail event at Oxford Castle and Prison. It's a powerful opportunity to bring our historic site to life for a fantastic cause and to rally our communities to support them. By opening our doors, we hope to support the vital care they provide to local families facing unimaginable challenges and prove that even a 1,000-year-old building can make a real difference in today's world. Local business people who are interested in getting involved in future jail and bail fundraisers for Helen and Douglas House can contact ocrawford@helenanddouglas.org.uk.
Oxford United Stadium plans needs more time by the government to fully assess the planning application. The football club won approval from Charwell District Council at a meeting in August. Bosses have planned a new 16,000-seater stadium at the Triangle site near Kidlington, which will become their new home after the lease at the Cassan Stadium runs out. After council approval, full permission is needed by the Department for Housing, Communities and Local Government. But the club has said the government department has requested more time to go through the details. It is not known what the problem is, if any, or how long it would indeed take to reach a final decision. The club said in a statement, "Oxford United Football Club can confirm that the planning application for the proposed new stadium on land to the north of Oxford is still under consideration by the Department for Housing, Communities and Local Government." The Secretary of State has advised Charwell District Council Planning Authority that the department requires additional time to fully assess the planning application that the council approved on the 14th of August. Oxford United remains committed to delivering a world-class stadium that benefits both the club and the wider community. We appreciate the continued support and patience of our fans and stakeholders as we await the outcome of this process. Further updates will be provided as soon as more information becomes available. A source at the Department for Housing, Communities and Local Government said the department received requests to call in the planning application. The source added the extra time needed should not be read as any indication of the Secretary of State's view towards the stadium planning application. But the department declined to say why extra time is needed. Due to its size, the application was referred to the Secretary of State following Charwell District Council's approval. Angela Rayner was in post at the time, but since resigned over a tax scandal, with the position now being held by Steve Reed. The minister initially gets 21 days to decide whether or not to call in the application for further reconsideration. The Department for Housing, Communities and Local Government issued a holding direction on September the 11th to allow the Secretary of State more time to decide whether to call it in. It will remain in place until the Secretary of State decides whether or not to call in the planning application. Jonathan Clark, Development Director at Oxford United, had previously emphasised that securing the new stadium is absolutely critical to the future of the club.
The local MP for Oxford United's planned new stadium has spoken out after the Secretary of State was given more time to decide whether to call in the decision. The club want to build the stadium at the Triangle site near Kidlington, which will seat 16,000 people, as well as a 180-bed hotel and other facilities. Its lease on its current home at the Kassam Stadium is due to run out in a few years' time. The plans were given planning permission by Charwell District Council last month, and the application was referred to the Secretary of State for Housing, Communities, and Local Government for sign-off. The minister initially gets 21 days to decide whether or not to call in the application for further reconsideration. But on September 11th, the Department for Housing, Communities, and Local Government issued a holding direction to allow the Secretary of State more time to decide whether to call it in. Steve Reed, MP, became the new Secretary of State last week after Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner resigned earlier this month. Caleb Miller, MP for Bicester and Woodstock, which covers the area where the stadium will be, previously wrote to the Secretary of State asking for a speedy decision. He said, following the decision of the local planning authority, the law requires the Secretary of State to consider this major application. I wrote to Angela Rayner on the 1st of September to encourage her to make a prompt decision. More uncertainty is in no one's interests. I hope we won't be made to wait longer due to Labour's reshuffle and that Steve Reed will give his view very soon. In the letter, he said, due to the nature of the project, the decision now comes to you for approval. I urge you to consider it swiftly. This is in everyone's interests so that the club has certainty that it can begin to develop its detailed plans to deliver on the commitments made to local residents. Fellow Oxfordshire MPs Annalise Dodds and Sean Woodcock wrote to Steve Reed last week asking that the decision should be made speedily for the sake of the club and its fans. Campaign group Friends of Stratfield Brake wrote to Secretary of State asking for the plans to be called in. The holding direction will remain in place until the Secretary of State decides whether to call in the planning application. The department said the holding direction should not be read as an indication of how the Secretary of State views the application.
Outdated local government structures are limiting national economic growth, the leader of Oxford City Council has said. Councillor Susan Brown made the comments as Oxford backed a new report calling for reform to help cities to unlock their full potential. The case for cities, published by Inner Circle Consulting on the 23rd of September and supported by 11 UK cities, including Oxford, highlights the importance of enabling cities through local government reorganisation to help the national government meet its growth mission. The report highlights how outdated boundaries and governance models are holding back cities' ability to contribute fully to national growth, innovation and public service delivery. It argues that all cities should be given the agency, appropriate governance and voice to be able to fully respond to growing needs across the UK. Councillor Brown said, cities like Oxford have proven time and again that we have the ideas and skills to drive local and national economic growth. However, we are so often constrained by outdated local government structures and geography. Oxford is not alone in this. The UK is home to many high-performing small cities that contribute significantly to the country's economic growth and cultural landscape. It is essential that our cities have a voice and are granted the autonomy we need to really succeed. Local government reorganisation presents a once-in-a-generation opportunity for us to be heard and to shape the future success of the UK, while also addressing the modern needs of our cities and public services. The government has asked councils across England for proposals on simplifying the structure of local government in their regions. In Oxfordshire, three models are being considered, which would replace the county's six existing councils with either one, two, or three unitary authorities. Oxford City Council favours a three-model council. This would see the creation of Greater Oxford Council, covering Oxford and its Green Belt, Northern Oxfordshire Council, covering most of the existing Charwell and West Oxford districts, and Ridgeway Council, covering South Oxfordshire, Vale of the White Horse, and West Berkshire. The other options are a two-council model that would see the creation of Oxford and Shires Council, covering Charwell, Oxford City and West Oxfordshire, and Ridgeway Council, covering South Oxfordshire, Vale of White Horse and West Berkshire, or a single council covering the current boundaries of Oxfordshire County Council. Each of the new councils will be responsible for all council services in their area, including those currently provided by the district, city and council councils and county councils. A national decision on local government reorganisation is expected in 2026, with any new councils likely to be established in 2028.
Extra marshals are being deployed to patrol a new wider walkway linking Botley Road with Fryde's Wide Square near Oxford Rail Station. Network Rail has provided the new walkway for pedestrians and cyclists as part of a £231 million scheme to upgrade the station. Cyclists and pedestrians share the walkway, and cyclists are asked to dismount in the 4-metre-wide space. But some cyclists are refusing to get off their bikes and are cycling through the walkway instead, despite signs requesting them to dismount. Now Network Rail has announced that additional marshals will be deployed in the walkway. A spokesman for Network Rail said, "The number of marshals will increase from 2 to 3, with one marshal stationed on the corner next to the One restaurant in Botley Road and two marshals along the walkway. The marshals are there to help ensure that people using the walkway keep to the left and that people on bikes or scooters dismount. Thank you to everyone who uses the walkway for continuing to consider other users and for your ongoing patience." Cyclist Nigel Firth, who lives off Botley Road close to the station, said earlier he believed cyclists should be allowed to ride through the walkway instead of being asked to dismount. Work is being completed to reroute utilities in Botley Road and in Fryde's Wide Square in preparation for a new western entrance to the rail station. The scheme has been hit by repeated delays, and Botley Road, which shut at the rail bridge in 2023, is not due to reopen until August 2026. The overall project includes replacing the rail bridge with better access provided for pedestrians and cyclists, creating the new western entrance, and building a new platform to improve east-west rail links. Foundations for a new rail bridge are now being built before the old bridge is demolished, and the new bridge built during an 8-day railway closure scheduled for February 2026. Earlier this week, it emerged that new architects are being invited to bid for a $1.9 million contract to redesign the railway station. The architects are being tasked with providing plans for a complete redesign of the station, which would be completed once the Botley Road reopens. It is understood that the new architect's design will not involve the new western entrance to the station. A government advert said, "This commission forms a critical part of the Oxford Station Master Plan, which aims to deliver a new vision for the station environment, supporting Oxford's growth as a national rail hub and global innovation center." A spokesman for Network Rail said earlier, "We're looking to appoint an architect to see what could be possible. This appointment does not impact the work we're already doing around Botley Road as part of the Oxford Rail Station Enhancements Project."
An Oxford road will be shut for almost 2 months while Thames Water replaces sewer pipes. Seacorn Lane, running to Whiteham, will be closed between Monday the 6th of October and Friday the 28th of November. The road is accessed from the A420 close to the Botley interchange and runs alongside the A34 northbound after the interchange and is exited at the A34 too. Vale of White Horse Ward, the councillors for Botley and Sunningwell, Ben Potter and Emily Smith, said in a joint statement, Thames Water has notified us of the road closures in Wytham while they replace sewer pipes. The first closure will be between the Wytham Village exit from the A34 through to Wytham Village. Access will be maintained for residents of Wytham, bin collections and emergency vehicles only. The second closure will be from Seacourt Lane between the Wytham Village exit from the A34 to the junction for A420. No access at all, even for residents of Wytham. If you have any queries or problems with this closure, you can call Thames Water on 0800 316 9800 and quote the reference BB01240538.
Oxford United took Ashton Gate by storm on Sunday, September 21st, as they claimed their first win of the season with a stunning performance against previously unbeaten Bristol City, writes Gareth Davies. True, the U's rode their luck in a first half that saw the home side go close several times, but classy goals from Nick Prelec and Pashemi Placetta put the visitors in charge by the break, with the travelling fans in dreamland. There was almost a third for Oxford 5 minutes into the second half when Sam Long headed against the foot of a post, but City's best player, Anai Metmedi, fired the home side back into the match in the 52nd minute. That set up a battle, with Oxford killing off the match in the dying seconds of normal time with a free kick from Brian de Kiersmacher to leave the away support gleefully celebrating all 3 points. This was a classic shock result. The odds had been heavily against winless United before kickoff, with City unbeaten in the championship and in third place, 20 ahead of the visitors. Oxford boss Gary Rowett made 2 changes forced by injury, with Brody Spencer coming in at right back in place of Ben Davies. That meant Sam Long moved across into central defence. Prelec made his first start of the season, coming into the attack alongside Will Lankshire with Matt Phillips sidelined. City, with 12 goals in 5 championship games before this match, carried a potent goal threat, but Oxford, playing in their all-black second kit, were first to threaten. Placetta burst into the box from the right in the 4th minute, and homekeeper Radek Vitek was forced to concede a corner as he dived at the Polish winger's feet. That fired up the home side, and United midfielder de Kiersmacher nicked the ball off the toe of Emil Reese as the Robins striker lined up to shoot from close in. But Oxford silenced the home crowd by taking the lead in the 18th minute. De Kiersmacher delivered a brilliant free kick into the 6-yard box. Prelec slipped his marker to meet the ball with perfect timing and score with a firm, close-range header, his first goal of the season. This was all-action stuff, and Long was quickly in action at the other end as he made a crucial block to keep out a goal-bound shot from Anai Metmedi. Oxford were soon under pressure and, just after the half hour, Spencer brought off a miracle clearance off the line with an overhead kick as Mark Sykes' corner from the left threatened to go straight over the line. The visitors had another great escape 3 minutes before the break when Reese beat the offside flag to break clear with just United keeping Jamie Cummings to beat. Fortunately, the Dane shot wide. Oxford's answer was to go 2-0 up in first half added time. De Kiersmacher's corner from the right could not beat the first defender, but Placetta met the clearance first time to rocket home a right-foot shot into the top corner and send the home side off to a chorus of boos. Long scared Bristol with that header soon after the break, but Mamadi's long-range screamer matched Placetta's and set up a second-half battle. City stepped up the pressure, but Oxford's Stam Mills forced a fine save out of Vitek with a fine shot within seconds of coming off the bench in the 72nd minute. Then came the late Oxford goal that sent the home fans streaming for the exits.
A groundbreaking ceremony has been held for a new building at the heart of the University of Oxford's Radcliffe Observatory Quarter. The Ratan Tata building, named in honour of the Indian philanthropist, will serve as a permanent home for the Oxford India Centre for Sustainable Development, established at Somerville College in 2013. Jan Royal, former principal of Somerville College, said, "Today we break ground on the Ratan Tata building, a project that represents both the final piece in completing our historic campus and a bold statement of our future as an academic community. It has been an immense privilege to guide the evolution of these plans, and I know that I now pass on to my excellent successor, Catherine Royal, a plan that is Somervillian to its bones, inclusive, ambitious, and with a quiet radicalism all its own." The Oxford India Centre for Sustainable Development is the university's largest funding body for Indian scholars, focusing on critical issues of sustainability, governance, and development. The Ratan Tata building occupies the last available development site within the Radcliffe Observatory Quarter. It is also the first building at the university to be named after an Indian. Ms. Royal, principal of Somerville College, said, "Somerville has always gone its own way and blazed new trails. That's why Somerville is proud to be playing a key role in Oxford University's growing relationship with India. To my mind, Somerville's newest building brings together everything that is unique about our college. It's creative and it's ambitious, but it's also an example of living our principles of partnership and sustainability." The ceremony was attended by Professor Irene Tracy, Vice Chancellor of the University of Oxford, Vikram Doraiswamy, High Commissioner of India, and Varun Chandra, the UK Prime Minister's Special Advisor in Business and Investment. Natajaran Chandrasekaran, Chairman of Tata Group, said, "Today we make an important commitment to the future of Oxford India Scholarship in the memory of a man whose kindness was equalled only by his vision." Mr. Ratan Tata believed absolutely in the power of education to create a brighter future. In creating a permanent home for the Oxford India Centre for Sustainable Development at Somerville College, we see Mr. Tata's vision taking shape in a place he admired, in a form that will create a lasting bond of scholarship and hope between the University of Oxford and India. The event was convened by Ms. Royal, who also awarded Mr. Chandrasekaran a Foundation Fellowship, Somerville College's highest honour for philanthropic work, in recognition of the Tata Group's support for the project.
Oxford is set to get nearly 100 more affordable homes after the City Council agreed to take on several derelict buildings and turn them into housing. Four disused sites, including garages in Barton, empty offices in Cowley and Cutslow, and the former Enterprise Centre at St. Clement's, will be converted into homes. The City Council has continued to stress that it is struggling to meet demand for housing in the city, particularly affordable housing and temporary accommodation. The move was approved by Oxford City Council's Cabinet at their meeting on Wednesday, September 17th. The garages at Underhill Circus in Barton will be turned into up to 9 affordable homes. Officers said they hope to get planning permission for the homes next summer and for them to be built by 2027. The empty office block at Knights Court on Between Towns Road in Cowley would be turned into up to 34 homes, with some of these homes being used as temporary accommodation. Ellsfield Hall by the A40 in Cutslow will be demolished and replaced by a new building, which aims to provide at least 30 homes. The former Enterprise Center at Cave Street in St. Clemens, which was previously demolished, will be turned into up to 19 homes. There were plans to replace the site with a 2-to-3-story office building, but the funding opportunity was missed in 2023. The reports show that most of the homes provided will be one-bedroom homes, although some 2- and 3-bed homes will also be provided within these developments. Affordable housing is classed as up to 80% of what a private landlord would charge for the same room or property. The City Council wants to deliver 1,600 affordable 10-year homes by March 2029, with at least 850 being charged at social rent, which is typically 40% of the market rate rent. Councillor Nigel Chapman, Cabinet Member for Citizen Focused Services and Council Companies, said officers work hard to scour the city for possible housing sites, and that the approval of these substantial contribution to meeting the council's affordable housing target. He added, "I suspect there are very few councils in the county, when you look at the housing record at the moment, who set themselves a target and actually look on track to deliver it, and I think we should take some pleasure in that." Around £26.5 million will be used from the council's housing revenue account, including £11.7 million for Ellsfield Hall, £8.9 million for Knights Court, and £5.9 million for Cave Street. The City Council owns the land at Underhill Circus, Cave Street, and Ellsfield Hall, while West Oxfordshire District Council owns Knights Court. The Cabinet also agreed to a new temporary accommodation policy in the same meeting.
Time is running out to help friends of the Oxfordshire Museum acquire an Iron Age hoard discovered by a metal detectorist near Henley 5 years ago. The registered charity is around halfway towards raising the £10,500 needed to allow Oxfordshire County Council's Museum Service to buy the hoard, which includes a stunning horse brooch that is more than 2,000 years old. However, the fundraising campaign closes at noon on Monday the 6th of October, so donors are urged to visit the crowdfunders wedge page as soon as possible. Experts from the British Museum and Oxford University have added their support to the campaign, which was launched in July, by explaining the significance of the historic find. Dr. Sophia Adams, First Millennium European and Roman Conquest Period Collections Curator for the British Museum, said, "This is an intriguing board of beguiling objects marking a personal and powerful moment of burial. The harness brooch is a magnificent example of a rare type of object that formed part of the harness for a pony pulling a chariot. It is unusual to find this buried with a dress brooch, a coin, and the other items together in a pot." Emeritus Professor Gary Locke from the University of Oxford School of Archaeology said, "This is a very important collection of objects that throws light on the life in the late Iron Age, early Roman periods in Oxfordshire. Each item is interesting in its own right, but to be found together in this way gives them an added significance and rarity, raising all sorts of questions about their original use and why they were buried in this way. A Roman coin found as part of the hoard. Image, Oxfordshire County Council. The hoard was discovered in the parish of Rotherfield Peppard in August 2020 and excavated by archaeologists. The Iron Age of the British Isles started 800 years BC and is believed that this hoard was buried in AD 50 to 150, shortly after the Roman invasion. The hoard was found in a pottery urn. The contents of the urn included a stunning copper alloy Iron Age horse harness fitting, an enamelled patera handle, a brooch, one silver Roman coin, and a lead weight. Such a hoard is classified as treasure under the Treasure Act. As the county's repository for archaeological finds, the County Council's Museum Service has the first chance to acquire it for Oxfordshire and ultimately save it from going into private hands. Donors who give over £20 will also be invited to a special viewing of the hoard if the campaign is successful. Donations made will be used only to support the acquisition and conservation of the hoard for the museum. Angie Bolton, curator of archaeology for the Oxfordshire Museum Service, said, This Oxfordshire hoard, buried nearly 2,000 years ago, really belongs to all of Oxfordshire residents. If you can chip in and support us, no matter how small your donation, we will care for it on your behalf. So far, 94 people have donated to the crowdfunder, and others have donated using the museum donation boxes at the Oxfordshire Museum Resource Centre. The Friends of the Oxfordshire Museum is a registered charity that supports the Oxfordshire Museum Service through fundraising and financial support for special events, acquisitions, and educational programmes.
Community groups are being invited to apply for up to £3,000 in funding to tackle inequality in Oxford. Oxford City Council has launched the second round of its small grant scheme, offering £34,000 to groups and nonprofit organizations with applications closing on October 6th. Councillor Linda Smith, Cabinet Member for Housing and Communities, said, "Reducing the inequality which blights our city is what motivated me to get involved in politics and become a councillor. And so I'm delighted we've been able to focus our community grants program on supporting those local organizations which are working to make sure that everyone in Oxford, whatever their background or circumstances, are supported to make the most of all the opportunities our brilliant city has to offer. I expect this funding to provide a welcome boost for local groups working hard to serve our community and look forward to sharing news about how the funds are being put to good use." The Council has awarded £388,000 to 86 organizations through the Community Impact Fund this year.
Oxford University has been accused of stoking the divide between town and gown over fears of traffic chaos from plans to redevelop a city mental health hospital. Under the plans, Warnford Hospital in Headington would be redeveloped with new buildings added, including a new mental health hospital, a modern facility for brain research, and a postgraduate college medical college. Oxford Health NHS Foundation Trust and the University of Oxford submitted the plans to Oxford City Council. But locals have raised concerns that the addition of 186 new car parking spaces will significantly increase traffic in Headington and make walking and cycling more dangerous. Oxford Health said it worked with the university to use the minimum number of spaces possible, and that the plans include investments which aim to minimise the traffic impact. The university was granted permission to redevelop a number of buildings at the Old Road campus in Headington in 2013. This included the provision of 459 car parking spaces, which sparked traffic concerns from householders at the time. Hannah Kirby from Headington Liverpool Streets said that the plans for Warnford Hospital were just history repeating itself. She added, "This application is the latest battle in the ongoing town versus gown saga." The 459 car parking spaces built in the earlier Old Road campus development are likely to have added more than 1,000 car journeys into Headington per day. Why does the City Council always side with Oxford University against the interests of the residents who fund the council? We know there are staff who are vehemently opposed to this parking increase and are ashamed that their employer is pursuing these plans. It reveals the university's proclaimed commitment to Vision Zero and sustainable transport as just empty words. Almost 400 people have signed a petition set up by Headington Liverpool Streets calling for the plans to be changed to reduce the amount of car parking. The planning documents show that out of the 546 car parking spaces planned for the site, 221 spaces will be for the university's new research facility, and another 44 will be for the postgraduate college. The hospital itself will have 230 spaces. Ms. Kirby added, "If the City Council allows this, It will be prioritising the commercial interests of the university over the health and well-being of residents and hospital patients. Many locals have submitted comments to the planning portal, with the application gaining 37 objections, 6 supporting comments and 1 neutral comment. Dr. Aaron Buchanan commented, "I object purely on the extra parking provision of 230 spaces. The rest of the application is wonderful and I look forward to its completion. However, adding yet more parking provision to an area already suffering severe traffic problems is not only short-sighted, but goes against the goals and commitments of the councils, Oxford University, hospitals and Oxford University itself." He added that the junctions at Old Road, Churchill Drive and Gypsy Lane were already dangerous and that adding more cars to the area is unforgivable. County Councillor Liz Brighouse, who represents Churchill and Lye Valley, also objected to the plans, arguing that it was unacceptable to bring more cars into the heavily congested area. She said, "A congestion charge is to be levied on residents to reduce car journeys, but this application, if agreed, will add to the congestion. The accumulated development in this area has been detrimental to the community around it, and this new development should not be agreed." She added that the site is not suitable for another university college and that low-cost housing should be provided there instead. City Councillor Chris Smoten, who represents Headington, commented on the plans, pointing out that there was already exceedingly heavy traffic on Old Road and Morrill Avenue around the hospital, commuting and shift change time. He added that restricting parking spaces would encourage the applicant to provide alternatives, such as providing a shuttle bus from the park and ride sites. Others submitted comments in support of the scheme, with Ian Bowler commenting, "The proposal will bring high-quality jobs to Headington and Cowley, helping to regenerate these areas. The objections that I've read about impact on the environment and increase in road traffic are not credible when balanced against the benefits of the scheme." MP for Hemley and Tame, Freddie Van Mierlo, also pledged support for the project, having raised the need for investment in the site in Parliament. "Our application follows a programme of extensive engagement with a wide range of stakeholders and a great deal of work to produce detailed proposals for the site that are sensitive to the surrounding area and the local community and include a significant investment to encourage public transport, walking and cycling, and to minimise the traffic impact. We appreciate there will be a range of views expressed by local residents and other stakeholders, and these will be considered by the Council during the determination period."
International street food vendors have been announced for a new food festival in Oxford. Starting from Friday, October 10, Oxford Food and Drink Festival will take over Broad Street with an array of stalls. It has been described as a celebration of flavor, culture, and community, with entry free for all. Organized by LSD Promotions, the Oxford Food and Drink Festival will run for 10 days and will be open between 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. daily, apart from on Sunday, when it is open from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Siobhan Noak, Communications and Engagement Manager at LSD Promotions, said, "We're so excited to bring a new event like this to the city. Oxford has such a brilliant food scene, and Broad Street is the perfect backdrop for celebrating it. With student discounts, happy hour offers for workers, live music and roaming entertainers every day, it's going to be a real community event with something for everyone. Some traders will be offering exclusive student discounts to welcome Oxford's new and returning students, while city center workers can look forward to special happy hour deals, Monday to Thursday, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m., which is perfect for after-dinner drinks. There will be stalls selling items including hand-painted artwork and crystal jewelry, cashmere accessories, and gifts. LSD Promotions is the team behind Gloucester Green Market, the Dine and Devour Festivals, and the Oxford Victorian Christmas Market."
Oxford City FC are pleased to announce that Rachel Burt as new hospitality and events manager and will also become head of player care. Rachel joins after three successful years as head of hospitality and events at EFL clubs Swindon Town and joins at an exciting time at the M Group Stadium. "I'm really looking forward to it," she said. "Over the summer, there was significant investment in a new building with a brand new matchday hospitality area. Along with the clubhouse bar and the Exeter marquee, there are many options for match days and events during the week. I've already seen the way that the club is central to the local community, and I hope to be able to add fresh ideas and a new angle to what we offer here at the ground. We are extremely excited by what we can achieve here with Rachel and her experience within the EFL leading successful events. The timing is key, as the new hospitality space in the Velocity Suite are almost a blank canvas for Rachel and the team to set up and create vibrant events and matchday experiences for everyone who comes along."
Notice to listeners of Oxhawk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to Oxhawk on an Alexa device, you can use the Talking Newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, "Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper." Then, to listen to Oxhawk, please follow this procedure.
Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to Oxtalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help. That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, you can telephone Margaret on 074-96-06-2280. That's 074-96-06-2280. Please remember to leave your name and a contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from the previous 4 weeks are available on our website at www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. The current edition is also available on Alexa using the Talking Newspaper skill. Instructions on how to do this are contained in a separate track in this edition. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more news. So until then, we hope you have a good week.